Hey there, everybody. This is Elizabeth Gordon, the Chic Entrepreneur, and welcome to the Chic Perspective Show. Thanks so much for tuning in today, where we are talking about women entrepreneurs succeeding in style, their own personal style. And with me today is a great group for you. Today we are shining the chic spotlight on the Inventors Association of Georgia. So with me is Dave Savage, who is the president of the Inventors Association of Georgia. And we also have two fabulous members of this group as well with us, Sue Watson, an IP attorney and owner of SC Watson Law Firm, and also Donna Diflow, who is a furniture industry veteran and a book author of How to Buy Furniture. So thank you so much all for joining me today on the Chic Perspective Show. Welcome, everybody.
You're welcome, too.
Thank you.
And it's good to be here.
So, Dave, tell me how you got involved in the Inventors Association of Georgia and a little bit more about the group itself.
Well, the group is 30 years old here in Georgia. There are member-led inventor support groups all around the country. We are loosely under the umbrella of the United Inventors Association, we have been around for 30 years. We attract 60 to 70 inventors and service providers and wannabe inventors every month to our meetings, and we're there to educate, inspire, and as I say, scare the hell out of people with a big dose of reality of the journey ahead. So people need a body of knowledge before they start spending money, and we help build that body of knowledge to learn and confirm what they should be doing.
So, I mean, I know a lot of people have great ideas and they think, oh, I could be an inventor, you know, that they just don't know where to start. You have people in your group at all levels, right? Or who is...
Absolutely. We have people who just came. We just had a meeting on Saturday, and somebody says, I feel inventive. I feel creative. I'm waiting to think of something to create or find somebody who's got something that interests me. And then we have people who have products on the market and trying to make a profit enough to pay back their development costs.
All of the stages of the business development there. So as the president of this group, you have met hundreds of inventors, probably thousands. What are some of the things that you think it takes to be successful as an inventor?
Money, time, and a lot of teamwork. So a lot of people, of course, try to do this on their own, and they, you know, there's a separation. There's a difference between that entrepreneur personality and the inventor personality oftentimes, and often they don't go together very well. There's a different mindset, different type of personality, and you have to know where your skill sets are, where your knowledge base is, and supplement that with folks around you who will be truthful about where you are. So people try to be helpful, hopeful to you, and not discourage you, but sometimes that's perceived as affirmation of your idea, and it ain't necessarily so.
Right. It's important to get real straight up feedback, and feedback from business people that actually know, you know, how to play the game, because sometimes your friends and family will just, you know, pat you on the back and say, yeah, good luck with that. So what a great network and resources that you bring together. Now, Donna Diflow, I want to ask you more about your story because you've had a really exciting run. You own your own company, Design Dynamic, which then became kind of the umbrella for product design and development and intellectual property, as well as marketing, speaking, training. My goodness. How did you first get started?
Well, this was all an offshoot of the furniture industry. I started in the furniture industry selling furniture, and then it progressed into other aspects. I was involved in product design and development, and then I got more interested in furniture, and then it occurred to me that I wanted to see a different aspect of furniture. There was the outdoor furniture and the indoor furniture, and the indoor furniture was upholstered furniture, was much more comfortable, and I wanted to first come up with an idea. And this involved patents eventually, and this involved in the inventing. And so I decided I wanted to create an all-washable piece of upholstered furniture. And this then, with the all-washable piece in mind, would lead to perhaps better outdoor furniture, more comfortable outdoor furniture. And in order to do that, I had to create cushions that would drain water.
Right, exactly. Oh, absolutely. I mean, anybody would tell you it's much more comfortable to sit on the couch than, you know, on a hard patio chair.
Absolutely.
So you wanted to bring the two together, and this really involved coming up with something totally different. And you weren't really thinking, oh, I want to invent something. It was just an idea that occurred to you.
Well, as we all start, it's a challenge. It's something that we wanted to see in the marketplace, perhaps. It's something we want to bring to the table that's new and different. And I saw the problems that people were having with upholstered furniture. One, that it wasn't washable. My prototype was a wing chair, matter of fact, a totally upholstered wing chair that was completely water washable. And in order
to do that,
well, because I thought at the time that you could take your furniture perhaps out on the porch and wash it with water and then soap and water and then let it dry and bring it back in. And then that thought led to the idea of the outdoor furniture, which meant that a cushion had to be drainable. And so
there were a couple different leaps along this process.
There were a couple of different leaps. And I had challenges, obstacles to overcome, challenges again, that I had to have everything that would be, couldn't use any foam, had to have something drained because the cushion had to be able to drain water through it. And that involved a porous fabric. That involved an all-fiber core. And that also involved a drain on the bottom that would allow the water to flow in down through it.
Right. So it was design and engineering and material.
So you have to think of the frame. You have to think of the hardware had to be stainless steel. The frame had to be plastic. That's when Sunbrella was coming on board, too. And then I finally got it all together, and I licensed it to the Lane Venture Company. And because they were an outdoor wicker and rattan, primarily, well, they had just started. They were actually primarily indoor wicker. But this cushion, which they took the cushion and not the whole chair. It's kind of hard to put a wing chair on a deck.
On a deck,
I mean, it, you can do it, but it doesn't exactly look right out there.
Right.
So they liked the idea of the cushion, and because of the cushion, they licensed my furniture drain system. And then they built a whole company around it in the sense that they had to come out with a weatherable wicker that would be impervious to the weather and combine the two. And they have developed, in the last 20 years, a very successful line of furniture. Weathermaster was the beginning of it.
That's fantastic. What a great story as far as, you know, the initial concept, trying a couple of different things, and then ultimately ending up with this great licensing deal.
And that has been you know, a true blessing, because it is a journey, and you have to rely on the company that you're working with, their integrity, and licensing is one way and one form of getting your product to market.
Now, what do you think were some of the biggest lessons that you learned along the way?
The lessons learned were the fact that you have to be willing to zig and zag and move in different directions. You have to do a lot of your own marketing yourself. You have to have a good prototype. I started with a prototype. I built the first wing chair, and then I literally took it up to them and sat it in their showroom and said, here. And because without that, you don't have a really good representation. Now, you don't have to drag everything, but you have to. That was a see, feel type thing.
Right. And you need to be able to show them something.
You need to be able to have a show and tell. That's something you can be very hands-on with. And also the other lessons were just to, if you want to, it's kind of like pull-through marketing. If you don't want to wait for something, you want to actually get it. I put out a press kit with 50 items in it and sent it out to the press across the country.
So some guerrilla PR.
PR. And, of course, once Lane got started, and we didn't know where this was going to go, it really took off and was increasingly successful. And they're still using the same, you know, cushion today and have been very successful with it. And there's other things I've learned, too, along the way, because I have another patent that I have that's not related to this. But it's just, you know, obviously persistence and doing your homework and knowing where you're going and then trying to do the very best you can and just... It's a comprehensive journey. It's a very comprehensive journey. And also prepare. Read as much as you can about intellectual property, patents, trademarks, everything that goes with it. Because I presented a patent portfolio, meaning I had four patents and trademarks. So I wasn't just coming to the door with one item.
Okay, right. And that probably made it look like a lot more of an attractive offering and solid case for them.
Exactly.
And build up the value.
You're exactly correct.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of intellectual property, I am now going to bring Ms. Sue Watson into the conversation. Now, Sue, you own an intellectual property law firm. Tell me a little bit more about your background and what your company does.
Well, my background is actually varied, but I started out in a medical discipline. And actually, from there, I had taken a road toward inventorship and have several patents in my own name. And in doing so, decided I liked the process so well that I got interested in going to law school to become a patent attorney.
Oh, wow.
So,
it really struck a chord with you.
Well, it was interesting, as Donna had said, in educating yourself as much as possible about intellectual property. I realized that there was a lot I didn't know, and certainly a lot that wasn't immediately understandable about the patent protection. And once I really got involved and understood what the patent protection was and what my own patent attorney was doing to obtain patent protection for me, then I became fascinated with the whole process.
It is a very interesting process, and there's a lot to it, and that's why it's so important to work with an attorney who's a specialist or a firm that really specializes in IP law. I've heard that, you know, there's so many nuances. Now, you guys do patents, trademarks, service marks, copyrights, and also patent clearance analysis. What's that?
Well, in the process of patenting an item, you're looking around to see if there's anything like it. But in doing so, you've got to also look for if there's something already out there. If you would bring your item to market and you would be infringing someone else's patent because your item would be so close to their patented item that you would be infringing their patent claims. And patent infringement ends up being a very expensive proposition for everyone involved. You certainly want to avoid it. So as part of the whole process of developing a patent application, and even after the patent application is filed, you usually search and you continue updating a search. And you may need to search the world, not just United States patents, but preferably you search for patents in other locations in the world, simply because there's so many multinational corporations. A corporation could file a patent in Germany, for instance, and then you don't find it because it's filed in Germany. And then 18 months later, they're allowed to file in the United States.
And 6 months later, it's on the store shelves.
Right, exactly.
You didn't
know
about it.
They're ahead of you. You didn't know about it. All of a sudden, you have a problem. So it's very important to continue to look, and before you actually come out and launch, to obtain what's often called a freedom to operate opinion, which tells you that you've done the best you can to search and determine that you're not going to be infringing any other legitimate United States patents. And then if you're bringing that product to market in any other countries, of course, you're going to be looking for the same thing in those countries, too, not to be infringing in those countries. The importance is in the United States is unique, that if you know that you are infringing a patent and yet bring your item to market anyway, you could get treble damages. Treble damages could be millions and millions of dollars. So you want to avoid that at all costs.
Absolutely.
That's a big reason in the United States to get freedom to operate opinions.
So what are some of the things that people need to know kind of upfront about the patent process?
It's interesting that you ask, because most people, and Dave and I have talked about this too, most people want to jump in and get a patent too quickly.
That's what I've found as well.
Yes, they have the idea and they want to rush to get a patent because they're sure someone's going to steal the idea. And in reality, the best thing you can do if you're interested is to go ahead and get a prototype made, much as Donna had done. She did her own prototype. She determined what maybe changes it needed and made those changes and made sure that the prototype worked the way that she wanted it to work before she sought patent protection. And my advice to people would be definitely try at all costs to get a prototype first, because you're probably going to change your idea from your initial idea. When you get the prototype, you're going to realize you're going to have to make some revisions to it. So it's good to make those revisions before you apply for a patent.
For a full patent, sure.
Most people go through, actually, they think they're going to do one patent, one prototype, but they end up making really 10, 20, 30 prototypes, and often what they end up with look very little like what they started out with. And they design things in their head based on the manufacturing methods they're aware of and the materials they're aware of, and then until they start doing some more investigation, they realize, well, this could be really thinner, smaller, based on the kind of materials that I have now learned about.
Right. As you explore other avenues, your concept of what is possible or what you're really inventing kind of expands and changes. And it's interesting that you've all talked about the evolution of the idea. So how do you think inventors or entrepreneurs need to sort of manage that evolutionary process of, oh, I've got an idea. How do you take that idea and then really create a plan around it, move forward, refine it, change it? What's some advice you all have to offer?
In the scope of expanding your brain to what's possible, very few of our inventors who come to our meetings have ever been to a trade show for the industry they're looking to be in. And once you start walking around a trade show, your head begins to explode with, you know, not only looking for ideas for the products, but you say, well, once I have it, who am I going to sell it to? And who are these people I want to, quote, get in bed with? You know, you say, I found a major distribution channel up in upper Wisconsin. They have 8,500 stores. Well, if you began reading the trade magazines for your industry as well, you might find that the old man just died and his idiot son has just taken over and going in a whole new direction, or they're having financial problems, or they're doing so well they're about to be bought out by somebody else who might just shelve your concept because that competes with what they're already doing. So you better be going to getting the trade magazines,
the websites, research. So we mentioned research even on the way in before we went live on the air. What means do people need to use to research? I mean, the internet is so huge, sometimes it's overwhelming how much is out there. What are some research recommendations?
Actually, Donna had made a good recommendation, which is the first thing is just simply do a Google search to see if you see anything close to your idea out there. And who has it, because you might want to look a little deeper. If they have something very close, chances are they might have another patent application in the patent office that exactly covers your idea. So you want to look. And also look out there in terms of what Dave said. Look who your competition would be or who you might sell your idea to. Or you can't really sell an idea. You'd have to sell a patent application. That's a good point there is people don't buy ideas, companies don't buy ideas, they only buy pending patent applications or patents.
Now, that is a good point because a lot of times people don't know exactly where they could exit or what business strategy they could pursue. We talked a little bit about licensing as one avenue. If you're not in a position where you want to necessarily design, manufacture, and, you know, have your own vertical marketing strategy around this, what are some of the other options that you've seen people take an idea and leverage it into a business opportunity, but maybe not necessarily have to build the whole thing from scratch?
Well, the easiest thing would be is that if you do have one or more patent applications or patents, as Donna did, she took a whole portfolio of intellectual property, which included a number of patents as well as trademarks, so that the company who would buy her intellectual property had coverage of the item by patent, and already she had a trade name and the goodwill of the trade name already out there in the trade and known in the trade. And that's important as well. But one of the ways is obviously selling the patent or patent application. The other is there's several others, but one of the others is doing it yourself. Yeah. Depends on what you have. I guess anyone who's watched some of the shows on TV, I guess one's Shark Tank, and yeah.
Right,
I guess
or
there's
like
another
Donnie
one.
Deutsch, the big idea. Mm-hmm.
You know, for instance, there was a guy who came up with, I believe it was gluten-free Play-Doh, and he was trying to make it in his home, and he was successful. He was getting the interesting thing, he was too successful. He couldn't keep up with his orders. He needed to go out and sell it to another company. So, yes, you can make it yourself, but then you end up with a problem if you are manufacturing and making it yourself and you become too successful and you can't keep up with your orders. Then you have to decide what you're going to do. Go ahead, Donna.
Along the lines you were saying, people oftentimes want to think of the big box store like Walmart, one of the bigger retailers, and couldn't even begin to provide them with the goods that they needed or the amount of money that they had to have to spawn this. So
right, it, to it, ship it, 30 it, days worth of quantities it, to every Walmart,
and
in
they
the
have
world.
So many stringent requirements that you have to have. But for someone beginning, now I chose licensing because I wasn't going to go into the furniture manufacturing business. That was clear to me. So that was the best route for me. But for someone else, when you are licensed, you receive a royalty. That is different than if you make it yourself. Then you can control pretty much the profits that you make. That's one other avenue.
Margins, but the losses also come straight to you.
And that's another whole thing too, because when you think about patent protection, and a patent is something that is a road to legal protection.
Right.
And people think that a patent, that I've got a patent and nothing can happen, or you can't lose it, or something else. And there's different variables on that, but it gives you the right to go to court. It gives you some legal
ground to stand on.
If you can afford to sue somebody.
Yes.
If you can afford to be sued, if you can afford to monitor the industry to see who might be infringing and decide how much of what they have looks similar to yours and get expert testimony, all of which costs far more money than most people imagine.
So going into down that path is a pretty serious business decision, and you need to make sure that this is actually going to be worth your while.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I will say that manufacturers, bigger companies, and in retailers, if they're retailers and manufacturers, they will want a patented product normally.
Okay.
Because it gives them exclusivity, and it's that exclusivity they're after in the marketplace, so they don't have the competition.
Sure, they want to be the only place you can buy this
thing. And, of course, they can afford to defend it as well. Whereas sometimes an independent person who goes in and does all the patent work and everything else, they're starting getting knocked off out there. People are duplicating what they're making, and they go to say, hey, you can't do that. And they write the letter, and the other infringers just keep on going. And the only way to stop them is through legal action. And I know that you've experienced this as well as when
if you get knockoffs from overseas, then you have means to prevent the import or seize those goods when they are imported into the country if you have patent protection.
But your patent protection only qualifies for something that is very similar to what you've got. If there's any size to the market, the amount of money that your competitors can throw at having a non-competing variation of it is incredible. There are services that a company can have that if you are looking at their patent, not only will they be notified that you are snooping around inquiring about their patent, but they'll be notified if you're snooping around anything of anybody else's patent that's anywhere near it.
There's paranoia out there in terms of a competitive marketplace.
And that's true. And Donna, like, for instance, having four patents, one of the first things that I talk to my clients about, even when we get a patent, is I want you, or even when we first file a patent application, is then I will sit down with them and I tell them, I want you to tell me how you'd get around this. Mm-hmm. How would you get around your own idea? Because, frankly, you should, if you find a feasible way to get around it, you should patent that, even if you don't intend to practice it, because a company is going to want more of what Donna had to offer. They're going to want not just one patent, but preferably a portfolio where they have set aside patent-wise a ring of protection, if you will, around the product, not just one single thing, but perhaps other defensive ways of making the product, even if it's not as feasible, even if it's more expensive commercially, you would still might want to go ahead and get patent protection for that, just to create that ring of patent protection to make it more attractive for a company to buy your IP.
Okay, right. I like that. I like the idea of the ring of protection and really thinking about it very strategically, both kind of offensive and defensive.
Yes.
And I would like to add, we certainly don't want to frighten anybody away because, you know, you just have to start. And a good place to start is the Inventors Club, where you're around a body of people who can support you, give you ideas, and share with you. And it's just kind of like-minded people.
Absolutely. How important has it been for you to be able to tap into a network of like-minded people and, you know, hear what other people are doing?
It's been very important. And I've been a member for several years, and I can... You're always either, you know, learning something or sharing something, and you can help others and you can be helped yourself. So it's an ongoing thing. It's that kind of chemistry. Because it's something where people will ask me, do I have a good idea?
Right.
And or can this work in the marketplace? And I may be thinking, well, gee, I don't know about that. That may be good or something. And yet their personality or their character can make that work where mine might not be able to. So
right.
I don't think there's anything like a wrong idea unless something is just totally useless, which you, Sue, probably run into sometimes with certain patents. But just get immersed in what you're doing. You've got a passion. You know you have a passion for it. And just if I just may share a story, we were just sitting out in the lobby, and a gentleman sat down between us and out there, and we were talking across him.
Right.
And he said, well, you know, he started talking about horses, and then Dave was mentioning something about horse
products.
And he said, well, you know, I have something that I really want to get in the market. I've invented something that I think would be a very good tool. And he said, and then Sue got going, and then I got going, and then Dave had to say, well, come to the meeting. And
right. You were having a little mini inventors meeting right there.
I mean, we just love this. I mean, it's just exciting.
I can tell. Well, the meetings, I've heard, are fantastic. Dave, what are some of the programs that you guys have had, and what are some of the programs we can look forward to coming up?
And Dave's a super leader. He's a fabulous
Dave is a great
president
leader.
Of a club.
Well, one of the things we try to do at the meeting, going back a little bit, is people come concerned about sharing their idea. And we don't have, as a group, some groups sign non-disclosure agreements. In fact, that's going to be our next speaker in June, is a professional about the world of non-disclosure.
That's a topic I know a lot of people have a lot of questions and maybe misconceptions about.
But at the beginning of the meeting, I share with people how to share their idea within our group without giving anything away. And the example I often give would be if I say I have a new type of spatula for a professional chef, you know, then you have an idea that what it is, but I haven't revealed anything about it. If I have a device for one-handed people to go fishing, again, it's a way of disclosing the kind of the market
the concept
without giving any way of the details. And I try to mix up both journey stories, which we find very, very valuable, either ones that are struggling or the ones that are successful, but I try to mix up patent knowledge, packaging, and marketing topics and non-disclosures. I'm booked out through 2014 for speakers and topics.
And if people are interested in finding out more about the club, getting the newsletter, where can they go?
A lot of people can't make it to our Saturday morning meetings, fourth Saturday of the month. I put out a fabulous information-packed newsletter, which is free, and if they will email me with their phone number, their email, and their full name, I'll get them on our friends list or our prospects list, and dave@davesavage.com, and I think we've just updated our website, so info@gainventors.org. In fact, that's our website. They can get updated information, gainventors.org. And we'll be glad to have them. Our dues are one of the cheapest in the country, $35 a calendar year, or $10 a meeting. We throw in coffee and tea, and we meet at the Ryans. They can have a breakfast buffet for $5, you know. But people can actually come an hour and a half before the meeting, and often stay an hour or two after the meeting.
Just to network.
In fact, we're even throwing in, one of our members does professional seminars for the Chambers of Commerce and others, and she's giving 2 hours of training after our meetings. So what a fabulous networking. You're looking to learn and confirm things you've already learned so that you know that that's consistent with what I've heard, so you're able to then, when somebody's giving you professional advice, to say, you know, that's consistent with what I've heard, time, advice, price range, I like you, let's go ahead. Otherwise, you're concerned that you're not getting accurate information.
Excellent. Well, it certainly sounds like a very valuable membership, so I encourage all of you to check that out. We are almost out of time. It's been such a pleasure getting to know all of you. At the end of all of our shows, we have a segment called our Chic Tip, and this is where I just go around the room and ask each of you to offer one tip that has really been either a success key for you or something that you like to advise clients or other partners of yours that, hey, you got to take care of this one thing. So let's start with you, Sue. What's your chic tip?
I would say even more than having an idea, have a business development plan. Make sure that you may think you have the greatest idea in the world, but does anyone else want it? So really put together a decent business development plan.
Good one. Dave?
To find experts in your field, go to the website of the trade shows for your industry. Look at who's doing the seminars for those things, and those are your experts in your industry around the topics that they speak on. They each all have websites and blogs and all the rest. So if you're looking to find a licensing person who knows all the people in the toy in the pet industry, go to those seminars and look at the bios on those people, and that's where you'll find experts in those industries that you're in.
Fantastic. And Donna, chic tip for us.
Well, just to keep learning and exposing yourself to those things that are going to enrich your knowledge base. Like Dave's mentioned, the trade shows and Sue the patent, seeking information on that. Just learn as much as you can. Be with the people that you know have the knowledge. And just keep on keeping on.
That's always important as well. Well, thanks so much to the Inventors Association of Georgia for joining us today on the Chic Perspective Show. This is Elizabeth Gordon, the Chic Entrepreneur. For more episodes of our show, go to businessradiox.com. And for more on what I do, you can check out my websites, flourishingbusiness.com, as well as chicentrepreneur.com. Hope to see you sometime in the chic circle soon, and tune in next week for more chic perspectives. Until then, wishing you all chic success.